on a stool. "It is the first hour," he said. "Your Majesty will wish to conduct the ritual of the Ibis, and then graciously grant an audience to the military commanders of the Tessortian and Ephebian armies. Both are seeking permission to cross the kingdom. Your Majesty will forbid this. At the second hour, there will..." Petrachi sat drumming her fingers on the arms of the throne. Then she took a deep breath. "I'm going to have a bath," she said. Kumi rocked back and forth a bit. "It is the first hour," he repeated, unable to think of anything else. "Your Majesty will wish to conduct..." "Kumi?"
"Yes, O noble queen?"
"Shut up! The ritual of the Ibis," Kumi moaned. "I'm sure you're capable of doing it yourself. You look like a man who does things himself, if ever I saw one," she added sourly. "The commanders of the Tessortian..." "Tell them," Petrachi began and then paused. "Tell them," she repeated, "that they may both cross, not one or the other, you understand? Both." "But," Kumi's understanding managed at last to catch up with his ears, "that means they'll end up on opposite sides." "Good. And after that you can order some camels. There's a merchant in Ephib with a good stock. Check their teeth first. Oh, and then you can ask the captain of the Unnamed to come and see me. He was explaining to me what a free port is." "In your bath, O Queen?" said Kumi, weakly. He couldn't help noticing now how her voice was changing with each sentence as the veneer of upbringing burned away under the blow-lamp of heredity. "Nothing wrong with that," she snapped. "And see about plumbing. Apparently pipes are the thing." "For the ass's milk?" said Kumi, who was now totally lost in the desert. A less desiccated culture would have used the phrase at sea. "Shut up, Kumi."
"Yes, O Queen," said Kumi miserably.
He'd wanted changes. It was just that he'd wanted things to stay the same as well. The sun dropped to the horizon, entirely unaided. For some people it was turning out to be quite a good day. The reddened light lit up the three male members of the Pataclusp dynasty as they pored over plans for...
It's called a bridge," said 2B.
"Is that like an aqueduct?" said Pataclusp.
In reverse, sort of thing," said 2B. "The water goes underneath, we go over the top."
"Oh, the king... the queen won't like that," said Pataclusp. "The royal family's always been against chaining the holy river with dams and weirs and such like."
2B gave a triumphant grin.
"She suggested it," he said. "And she graciously went on to say, could we see to it there's places for people to stand and drop rocks on the crocodiles?"
"She said that?"
"Large pointy rocks, she said."
"My word," said Pataclusp. He turned to his other son.
"You sure you're all right?" he said.
"Feeling fine, Dad," said 2A.
"No," Pataclusp groped. "Headaches or anything?"
"Never felt better," said 2A.
"Only you haven't asked about the cost," said Pataclusp. "I thought perhaps you were still feeling ill.
"The Queen has been pleased to ask me to have a look at the royal finances," said 2A. "She said priests can't add up."
His recent experiences had left him with no ill effects other than a profitable tendency to think at right angles to everyone else, and he sat wreathed in smiles while his mind constructed tariff rates, docking fees, and a complex system of value-added tax, which would shortly give the merchant venturers of Ankh-Morpork a nasty shock. Pataclusp thought about all the miles of the virgin Dajel, totally unbridged. And there was plenty of dressed stone around now, millions of tons of the stuff. And you never knew, perhaps on some of those bridges there'd be room for a statue or two. He had the very thing. He put his arms around his son's shoulders.
"Lads," he said proudly, "it's looking really quantum."
The setting sun also shone on Dil and Gurn, although in this case it was by a roundabout route through the light well of the palace kitchens. They'd ended up there for no very obvious reason. It was just that it was so depressing in the embalming room, all alone.
The kitchen staff worked around them, recognising the air of impenetrable gloom that surrounded the two embalmers. It was never a very sociable job at the best